This is Jack Donahue speaking. I'm going to be interviewing Will Ravinas today on the subject of the 1955 floods. Will is a Solbury resident, long-term Solbury resident, and a local historian and author. And we're conducting the interview today in Will's home office. The date is November 25th, 2014. By way of introduction to this topic, Will was a young man in 1955. He was 27 years old at the time of this flood, and he was old enough to have a good perspective on the flood, and this is the flood by which all other floods have been measured since, and maybe even before. So the flood of 55 is a big one. Will?
All right, thank you, Jack. But you have to recognize that this was not the only flood in history, that the whole Delaware Valley was carved away by successive floods. Now, we weren't here as white men or even as red men at the time, but if you go back a mere 15,000 years, you're back in the glacial era, when this land was relatively flatter than it is today. And so the Delaware River Valley has been carved out by successive floods, and all that earth has made its way down to either Lower Bucks or down to South Philadelphia, or maybe to Delaware and Maryland. So, yes, I remember the flood of 1955. I had only recently purchased my farm in 1953, and so I was kind of sensitive to the situation. Now, I was even more sensitive to it because at that time I was working for De Laval Steam Turbine Company. That's an illogical possibility because, of course, I majored in the history of art at Princeton and then ended up in a turbine factory. But at the time, I came home from Trenton and I drove up to the Stockton Center Bridge Bridge to come home up on the hill, only to find that the bridge was closed. And at that point, the flood had already risen high enough that I had to drive back to Trenton, cross in the Trenton Makes Bridge, and then come back up the Pennsylvania side. So it was a significant flood for its day. However, just as we're talking about history, certainly the history that people can remember, and white men were around here, there was a major flood in 1841, and that was significant to the canal system because it wiped out much of the Lehigh Canal at the time. What happens, of course, is it rains heavily at the upper end, and then some of the timbers break loose from the locks and bridges, and they take away pieces along the way and demolish everything below. So there was a flood in 1841, in 1862. In 1903, there's a marvelous story of a young man being on the bridge at Point Pleasant when the bridge gave way, and he rode down the river as far as Yardley before he was able to get off. So there was a flood in 03 that was significant. Then in 36, in 55 that we're talking about, and that's not the end of the line because, of course, there was damage in 71 and then 04, 05, 06 of this century. So floods are a periodic pain for the valley. The rain starts in the Poconos, and the significance was that much of the timbering had been completed, so the hills did not hold the rain anymore, and it came on down along the way and simply increased. The significance there is that if it rains only in the Poconos, it isn't much of a flood down here because it seems to spread out over the valleys. However, if the rain storm continues down the valley, then it merely compounds the amount of water that comes through. One of the ones to remember is 1885, which wiped out the Cuttalassa and took out 5 mills along that route in one day. So it's not uncommon to have a little high water periodically.
So you said the Point Pleasant Bridge was flooded out in
03.
And the pilings still remain.
Well, that's different. The pilings can outlast, but the water rises and it simply takes the bridge off.
Yeah.
Now, in 03, it was a wooden bridge.
Right. Would have been a covered bridge, maybe.
Yeah. So it all... the young man was riding on top of the bridge, as far as we know. The damage 05 took out that same bridge that was now built in metal, and it also took out the bridge at Lumberville.
The 1955 flood. Took out the
55 flood. Yes.
Right. That took out Point Pleasant again. Then.
True, and it also took out the Yardley Bridge, which has not been replaced.
And that took out the Lumberville Bridge also, 55?
True.
Okay.
And at that, up to that point from 03 to 55, it had one metal section and four or five wooden sections remaining.
Right.
But the flood did them in. It's very beautiful to watch. I mean, the water rises and trees come swimming down the river and houses come swimming down the river and 55-gallon drums. And
yeah, I've seen trees.
The crest may actually come a day or two after you think the rain has stopped. And that was, of course, the case in 55. The river kept rising because the... both the West Branch and the East Branch of the Delaware River were accumulating water up by Hancock, up by Delaware Water Gap. Mm-hmm. And when they came through, it just compounded and it kept rising, which is why I could drive home and get caught at the Stockton Bridge and not get through. The other problem, of course, is that the tourists... the next day and the following day all want to come up from Philadelphia to see the damage to New Hope. I mean, this is really quite dramatic and quite exciting. And so the town was totally inundated. The water was up 3 or 4 feet on Main Street. Waterloo Street was totally inundated and the water was up to the second floor. Water was up to above the cellars in Lumberville and was up to the flooring of the main, for most of the main house construction in Lumberville. So that took out the heating systems, it took out the electrical systems, it didn't wash away the roadway in New Hope, Lumberville, but it did wash away parts of the roadway in and around New Hope. And the people, of course, were driven up to the top of the hills. But the tourists came with all enthusiasm, and it was a beautiful, sunny August day, and they thought it was just wonderful to come see the damage. At that point, we had a brand new chief of police in New Hope, Chief Maxwell. He had retired from the Philadelphia force as a lieutenant, and he thought, this is going to be a really good deal. I'll retire to a sleepy little village on the river, and I may have a couple of parking tickets and a drunk on Saturday night, but the rest of the time, it's going to be sit in the office and relax. And within 2 years, he was faced with a total flood that virtually put the town out of business. So I and a couple of other characters met with the chief and said, this is a real problem. The flood is one problem and the tourists are compounding it. So we concocted the idea of closing Aquitong Road. Aquitong Road ends up being a circumferential for the town of New Hope. It goes from effectively for the tower of Bowman's Hill and comes across country, crosses Route 202, and swings down and ultimately ends up near Lumberville. So it was perfect, and I and others manned barricades on Aquitong Road, and we were very difficult with anyone who came up to it because there were legitimate householders and residents of the area, but there were also still hundreds and hundreds of tourists. So we manned our barricades for about 3 days, 3 to 4 days. It was a pain. We had at that point a disaster chief, Bob Islow, who was the postmaster in New Hope, and he was known as a disaster chief because we're still coming out of World War II, when we anticipated the possibility of the bad guys bombing New York or New Hope or Philadelphia or any of those spots in between. So he set up the headquarters at the high school, and that became the command post. It was the high ground of the area. One of the things that we had not anticipated were the nuts that appeared. In time of crisis, there are people whose screws get a little loose upstairs, and they decide that they are really experts in solving problems. And so we had half a dozen of them appear from nowhere, and they said, I am an expert in floods, and I'm an expert in solving human relations problems, and I can take over and run your disaster relief program. It took a couple minutes to figure out that they really were totally mixed up and, of course, had no clue as to what the neighborhood was like or what to do or where sources of supply or safety were.
It's interesting that the disaster headquarters was in the high school, because in this last hurricane to come through, the electric company set up their disaster relief efforts in the high school also.
It's the high ground. Yeah, it's the easy place to service the neighborhood, because all of New Hope is below there.
Yep.
Eventually, the water began to recede. And that's wonderful. But what it left was about 6 inches of mud and silt. And even that is not too bad for a day or two, and then it dries out and it starts to smell. And the smell in New Hope was appalling, because, of course, all the septic systems backed up too. And so it was days and days before that area could get cleared. One of the minor horrors was just below town, where there was a chicken farm. And, of course, all the chickens got drowned. And then they lay on the ground before anybody could haul them away and bury them. And so the smell of dead chickens was a bit overpowering.
So they were stuck in their coop, I guess. They couldn't.
Or even if they were on the lawn in the fields, they still died because they were drowned.
Yeah.
It was quite ugly. What is fascinating and was really miraculous was the true angels that came to our rescue, the Mennonites. Mennonites came from central Pennsylvania, Lancaster area, and they would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. They would feed their own chickens and cows and horses. They would get on a bus at 7 o'clock, drive 2 hours to get to New Hope by around 9 o'clock. And then they would roll up their sleeves and help clean houses and clean the area and dump the debris in the streets and, of course, the rotten furniture soaked with mud. And they were absolute angels. And then about 3 o'clock, they would all pack up, go back in their buses, drive back to Lancaster, and go back to their traditional farming. So whether they also went to other villages along the river. I've never known, but I know that there were at least two buses that arrived every day and took care of us.
Were there, usually with these floods, some villages are, or sections of the river are hit harder than others. Is that the case with this one too, where was the damage worse around Lumberville and New Hope than, say, upstream 20, 30 miles? Or was it bad all the way through?
To my memory, it was bad all the way through. There is the phenomenon that the water rises in certain areas because the hills are closer.
Mm-hmm.
Lumberville, in particular, had hills on the Pennsylvania side, but it had open fields on the Jersey side. So the water did tend to spread out there. Same would apply to Centerbridge, where Stockton was flooded. I didn't get to see very much of Stockton because the bridges were all closed on the Pennsylvania side. Then once you get down below Bowman's Tower, all of the land spreads out and flattens out. So the water has a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the amusing results of the flood for me, I helped to work on it for 4 or 5 days, and then that was all to be done. But at one point, I drove up to Lumberville to see what was happening and what happened to our road guards. And a lady came out screaming and yelling and saying, "Help, help, we're going to be robbed, raped, the world is going to be terrible, our houses are going to be demolished, help us, help us, we need guards, we need police." And I said, "Okay, lady, relax, you know, we have guys that will come and that live in the neighborhood who can keep an eye, and you won't have all the problems you're worried about." And then I got into a conversation with her as to who she was and why she was so concerned. It turned out that she was Chan Parker, who was the wife of Charlie of Birdland Parker. And he was dead by that time. He died, I think, in his 40s with drug overdose. But Chan Parker was still alive and well and renting a house in Lumberville. And she was absolutely convinced that terrible things were going to happen in beautiful downtown Lumberville.
So the looters were going to come.
It was going to be awful. Just terrible. She was totally frightened. We calmed her down, quieted her down, and in due course got as much protection as she needed there. But then the following Christmas, I said, "She owes me one." And so I knew where she lived, and I said, "Hey, we local boys are going to have a New Year's Eve party. What are the chances of getting some instrumentalists, some orchestra for our event?" And lo and behold, she had a man named Tony Scott, who became famous in his own right for doing modern jazz, and he was on a recording gig and it was taking time off, and he just happened to be in Lumberville. So we had one of the extraordinary orchestras in jazz of the East Coast playing our New Year's Eve gig down the other end of Paxson Road. So there's a happy ending to the flood of 1955.
Happy for you.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Will.